Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the few in attendance and the thousands listening around the world, let's get ready to gamble! That is, if I have any money left after my Packers puked all over themselves on Sunday night. Ooh. My name is Tony Cavallo. As always, I'm with Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, and Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer, Crookston, and we are doing a show that we don't normally do, a recap show. We're recapping the games that just happened on Sunday. San Fran versus Green Bay, Kansas City versus Tennessee, KC and San Fran are meeting in the Super Bowl. We will have a huge Super Bowl show coming for you next week, but right now we're going to break down the death of my Packers. And we have a guest coming on, a big-time guest,
A big, large guest.
I'm very excited for this guest. It's a great interview. I can't wait for you guys to listen to it. That's coming at the end of the show. But first, guys, before we talk about the recaps, I have a very funny bit of news for you. I don't know if you've heard this yet, but Mr. Joe Judge, new head coach of the New York Football Giants, coming from your Patriots, Dangles. He's hired Jason Garrett to be a part of his team.
Yes.
The Clapper is back in the NFC East. But that's not it, New York Giants fans. If you guys had any hope, if you were worried at all about the next season of the Giants, not only do you have Joe Judge, not only do you have Jason Garrett, but it is now rumored that Mr. Freddie Kitchens is getting a job in New York.
Shut up.
In
That's
New York.
True.
That is very not true. Mr. Freddie Kitchens right now is being rumored to join after 1 year of being the Browns head coach. Kitchens and Joe Judge worked together at Mississippi State in 2005. This is multiple sources confirming that Freddie Kitchens will be a part of the New York Giants.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Tony, you said you had a surprise for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't even speak. This spit guard on my mic's
going
to just get wet right now.
If you told me that Freddie Kitchens would get another job
I thought he was doing he was working at Cabela's full time.
I would have told you. No, he was selling beef jerky. You were the one who came up with that.
Hey, man.
That is unbelievable.
His face looks like it's been stung by a thousand wasps.
Can you imagine? All right. You have Daniel Jones, who's a young guy. Saquon Barkley's a young guy. They're going to listen to their coaches. But if you have a guy like Golden Tate, who is a veteran in here, he's played for a million coaches. If he goes in on day one and he sees Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens trying to tell him what to do, I don't know if that's going to be good. I don't know if that's going to work out.
Wow.
What are we doing?
As a Giants fan, you know, and we know plenty of them, can you imagine an offseason where it's like, what coaching moves did you make? Well, we got Joe Judge. Jason Garrett. We got Freddie Kitchens.
Oh, no.
Holy shit.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
That's like
going to the store and buying a bunch of stuff and then realizing when you got home that you picked up all the wrong brands and nothing that your wife actually needed you to pick up.
I think Joe Judge is smart. I think he's hiring fall guys. I think, you know, if they could do bad this season, well, listen.
Bold strategy
We're going to cut Freddie Kitchens and Jason Garrett. We're going to be better. He's already hiring people to take the fall for him. I like it. But let's talk about the fall from grace that my Packers had.
Okay.
My Packers, 14-3, bye week team. I've loved every second of it. I was not confident in the game, but I was definitely feeling good about the game entering the season. Obviously, I was excited, hoping upon hope, dreaming that they'd make the Super Bowl again. Aaron Rodgers, one final ride, and guys, it didn't happen. Did not happen.
I mean, you mostly have Raheem Mostert to blame.
Right? Yeah.
220 yards, 4 touchdowns for a guy who, up until this season, wasn't a blip on anybody's radar.
Unbelievable.
You know, cut
Great
by,
story for him.
Cut by a bunch of different teams. Talks about after the game how he still keeps those cut dates as a motivator. 3 times Aaron Rodgers was sacked. 2 interceptions.
Yeah.
Once they recovered a fumble for him.
Yeah.
His stat line did not tell the full tale of what his game actually was. He also didn't get it going. But
now, if you guys follow our social media, Instagram, Twitter, Left Coast Gamblers, we're all over the place. You might have seen a little video of me leaving the NFC Championship party that I was attending with you two idiots. I left after that first Aaron Rodgers interception at the end of the first half. I had about had it. It was 20-0. It was 27-0 before I got in my Uber. I defend the stance of leaving early. What do you guys have to say about me departing?
Look, I just think you should ride it through with your team. I think that's just how you should ride it out. If they're going to lose by a lot, sure, they're going to lose by a lot, but you know, I think you should be there. I know some people like to watch those kinds of games in solitude as well.
Yeah.
I understand people have their reasons for doing it. I just think you should stick by your team through.
Uh-huh.
Honest assessment from Schaefer the Sharp?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Like, why would you even be in that in our presence to be heckled, to be made fun of? To I was sitting next to you. I have money on the San Francisco 49ers. Of course I do. I'm trying to be respectful because you're my friend, Tony. Yeah. Even though we butt heads, you're my buddy. Come on, man. I was trying to keep my mouth shut. So selfishly, you're a dick for even showing up to that game because I couldn't even cheer for my goddamn team. So, like, because I was rooting for San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Brian the Ballerina Balzerini.
Yeah.
Of course, we're Lions fans. We don't know what it's like to win a playoff game, yeah, let alone be in the NFC Championship game. And we were debating, would we go to a watch party that, you know, has some neutral fans,
yeah,
and some fans on the other side? And I think by the end of the conversation, I convinced him a resounding hell no. You go and have a watch party with everyone that is on your side, on your team, mm-hmm, so you can enjoy the misery. Misery enjoys company.
Yeah.
You can just, you can mourn with your brothers and sisters in Christ, on the death of your Savior, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
So I commend you, first of all. Nothing but class from Tony Cavallo, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing but class. He didn't whine. He didn't piss. He kept a good attitude.
Left the party early.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, I commend you.
Would you not argue that that could be considered poopy pantsism?
I disagree because I don't think I'd put myself in the situation in the first place. I think how he handled it was very classy. Now, he did leave, and as sometimes will happen, just, you know, gambler's luck, his team, ironically, shockingly, in the fourth quarter, was one possession away from even covering.
Yes, they were.
But I'm not going to fault you for leaving. I just, you know, game of that stakes. Watch it with Packers fans.
Multiple reasons why I left. Obviously, the Packers were playing like shite. Obviously, I had to sit with people who were rooting for the 49ers and my buddies. Well, your buddies are always going to throw rocks at you when you're down. That's why they're your buddies. They're there to pick you up, at least. I don't know about Dangles would have, but someone would have picked me up. The thing is, though, multiple reasons why I had to leave. One of them is, guys, you got to change the juju sometimes.
Sure.
Sometimes you got to change the scenery. Sometimes you got to go for a walk. Sometimes it's you who's losing this game for the Packers. So I had to leave, and they did do better once I got home. Second time, and this I realized as I was entering, and I should have taken more heed to this. The last time I watched an NFC Championship game at the house we were at, it was Green Bay versus the Atlanta Falcons. Same thing happened. Matt Ryan came out and just whipped his dick across our faces. And I also left that party early because I was with people rooting for the Falcons.
So he pistol-dicked
you.
I will never, ever, ever watch an NFC Championship game with my team in it at that house again. The man who owns the house knows who he is. I will never be at that place again with my Green Bay team in it. We've had good memories there, just not in NFC Championship games. I will not be there anymore.
Tony, have you actually come to terms with Jimmy Garoppolo as 6 of 8 for 77 yards and you got beat by 17?
I have. It's Raheem Mostert, man. Mike Pettine, I mean, he's not going to have a job at this point next season. But I will say this to the two of you, and this is the time I'm going to complain. I'm going to have my moment here to sort of put a bow on the Packers.
You deserve it.
Sure. I have to say, since I have been a fan of football, I have had every single season a Super Bowl winning quarterback by my side. Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, every season they played in the jersey, had a chance to win the Super Bowl. And every year, except for one or two, we have come up short. And I have to say, Dangles, you don't know anything about this because you're a Patriots fan and they win most of the times they're in it. Drew, you, the Cleveland Browns, all those teams that are shitty don't know anything about this because your teams never get there. I would much rather be a Detroit Lions fan the past 20 years than I would be a Green Bay fan because of this. It hurts so much to come so close and not get there. And every year, to have the chance to do it, and for whatever reason, may it be injuries, may it be bad coaching, may it be bad matchups, may it be Colin Kaepernick throwing a ball to Micah Hyde that he hits him in the stomach and he drops it. It hurts so much to not have your team finish the job. Again, I was happy to be there. I said it last week. I was content with a 14-3 season under the first head coach, but again, it goes down as another year in Aaron Rodgers' legacy where he does not make a Super Bowl and does not bring one home to Titletown. It hurts so much to be a Green Bay fan year after year after year, but we love it, and that's why we continue doing it.
I really have no comment on that. This show clearly is not a political program, but I'm going to make a political statement. The last time the Lions hosted a playoff game, George H. Bush was in office.
Yeah.
So be careful what you wish for, Tony Squares.
Losses.
I'd rather be a
losses.
I'd rather be a Lions fan than a Packers.
Listen.
It is a curse, my friend. We have not won a playoff game since I was 6 years old.
Yeah, but when you go to the playoffs, aren't you so happy with glee that they even made the playoffs? I expect the playoffs. I expect the NFC Championship. I expect the Super Bowl every year, and to not get what I want every single year, it hurts.
Do you know what I would give? I feel like this is like a Chucky and Will Hunting moment. Do you know what I would give to have Bleacher Report repost me walking out of a watch party? Do you know what I would give? I'll fucking kill you, bro. If we're here in 20 years, I'll kill you. I'll fucking kill you.
Listen, losses in January hurt a lot more than losses in September. Dangles, what do you have to say?
Just that you guys have a bright future. I would say silver lining. Looking ahead, you've got a great young head coach who's only got years ahead of him. You've got an excellent defense that you built this year, and I can assume is only going to get better with time going forward. Aaron Rodgers certainly the question mark, but you guys have a lot going for you right now.
So trying
to get you on the silver lining track, you know, look ahead, maybe not backward.
And can I say, just reading in between the lines of the postgame comments from the Packers, from Aaron Rodgers, they kind of seemed happy to be there, my opinion.
Absolutely.
It was definitely an overachieving season. Rodgers' window, he apparently thinks it's not closing anytime soon. LaFleur, you know, for all intents and purposes, obviously performed really. Can't argue with his wins or losses. So, you know, I would agree with Dangles. Reasons to be optimistic, but in case you don't know, the Lions have the third pick in the draft.
I'm a little bit worried about the free agents we have to sign. I'm a little bit worried about us having a late draft pick. I'm wondering when we draft a quarterback, because you know it's coming somewhere down the line. I'm wondering if it's this year, if one of those first-round guys drops. But Packers are dead. We'll be talking about San Fran versus Kansas City next week in our huge Super Bowl podcast. Before we get to our guests, though, let's put a cap on an unbelievable run by the Tennessee Titans and Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, by the way, not only is Ryan Tannehill a free agent, Derrick Henry is a free agent. Could you see Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill not being able to come back to Tennessee? What if someone like the San Diego Chargers comes in and pays Derrick Henry the highest contract for a running back?
Well, here's my hot take for this, guys. Is there any kind of method to the madness that the Titans just running Henry literally into the ground? We know what running backs do after the age of 30.
Yep.
I think Henry's about 26. Obviously, he's not close to 30. But this, you know, Raheem Mostert, He's been cut by six teams. Look what he did.
Yep.
I am really, really curious, especially after the season King Henry had, if the Titans are going to back up the Brinks truck for his services.
Yep.
Because I guarantee you a team, i.e. the Jets and Le'Veon Bell,
yep,
will swoop in and make maybe an offer King Henry can't refuse. I'm interested in this, guys.
I'm very interested
because I just think what the rushing attack in the NFL has evolved into is by committee.
Yep.
You can find, you know, you can find hidden uncut gems, hidden gems. And man, you know, I was critical of the Browns not taking Saquon Barkley number one overall when it happened, but it's kind of hard to justify taking running back in the first round nowadays.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to old King Henry.
I think it's a man you got to pay, though. At the end of the day, this is a potentially generational talent. If what we see this year is the real Derrick Henry, and if he can continue this kind of production again, and I've said it before on the show, I just worry that level of success that we've seen from him is just not sustainable.
Yeah,
consistent basis. You can't just continue to run at that pace and not suffer injuries and not see some sort of regression. I do think we'll see regression next year. I think there are going to be a lot of people who draft him very early in fantasy, and he might not put up quite the numbers that people are expecting. We saw it from certain players this year, Patrick Mahomes being one of them. But I still think he's he's got to be a top priority. Like, if I'm the Titans, he's my top priority, who I'm giving a contract to.
I have a quick question, too. Regardless of what team they sign with, who do you think makes more money next year, Ryan Tannehill or Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry.
No, Tannehill easily.
I mean, quarterbacks always get paid more, but I understand Tannehill had a great run. He led a team to the AFC Championship, but I don't know if I'm going to pay him $20 million.
I'm not going to pay him.
I think
big
Tannehill
money.
Could get a Kirk Cousins contract, 3 years and $75 million.
Yeah.
I really do. 3 years, $75 million, and I think Henry. I mean, this is going to be a fascinating offseason, but I would make a wager. I'll put a pizza bet with any of you fools that Ryan Tannehill gets more guaranteed money on his contract than Derrick Henry.
That just seems like a lot of money to me to pay to someone who, frankly, stumbled into being good this year. Like, Ryan Tannehill just fell into a situation.
Kirk Cousins has 3 years, $75 million guaranteed on his contract.
Ryan Tannehill did not stumble into a good situation. Ryan Tannehill was great this year. Ryan Tannehill was the best he has ever been this year.
No, I'm not saying he stumbled into a good situation. He just simply stumbled into being good. He just happened to be good this year.
Yeah, he definitely happened to be good this year. Correct. But he was. Don't fault him for what he did. He was great
this
year.
If he goes and does it again next year, then I'll say, okay, now I have, and it's not just, he took this offense over and whatever, and it was that time and that place, and they were riding the emotion. If he can come back after a season off, and let's say he and Derrick Henry both stay, and they bring this offense back, and they do the same thing last year, then I'll go, okay, now this guy is worth Kirk Cousins' money.
I like it. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up on our QB rankings coming after the Super Bowl, a podcast, my favorite podcast of the year, the Left Coast, is QB rankings. But first, let's get to our guest. I can't wait for you guys to hear this interview. And remember, we'll be coming back for the Super Bowl week with even more. Oh, God, I'm so excited for the Super Bowl week. I'm so excited. It's going to be a great game, Kansas City versus San Fran. But first, a little word from our sponsors.
Left Coasters.
Are you a true American like me? Do you wake up and wonder, when will the next MLB season begin? Do you sit anxiously by the dinner table waiting for the hot stove to serve up some juicy deals? Do you have season tickets to your hometown team's AA affiliate? If that sounds familiar, then boy, do I have a podcast for you. Touching Base with Alan and Eric is the nation's premier MLB podcast, dishing all the necessary news you need and the go-to guide for all 162 glorious games. And unlike today's version, this podcast only has one true outcome: pleasure. So when you're out at the bar, don't
strike out
talking ball with your boys, but rather hit a
home run
with the facts by listening to Touching Base with Alan and Eric, available on SoundCloud and Instagram. That's Touching Base with Alan and Eric, the five-tool podcast prospect that every scout needs.
Hey, now, better come on now.
All right,
can't
here we go,
twos.
Here
on,
we go,
babe.
Twos.
Come on,
Left Coasters.
Hey, this is Dangles from the Left Coast Gamblers. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We are available on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, please leave us a review. Leave us 5 stars if you like what you hear. 5 seconds of your time is 5 new listeners for us. You can also find us on Twitter at Left Coasters Pod and on Instagram and Facebook by searching the Left Coast Gamblers. And we hope you'll check out our pages each week for new contests, live tweeting and posting on NFL Sundays, behind the scenes content, and more ways to engage with the show and make you money. And as always, thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Left Coast Gamblers. Tony Cavallo, Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crooks, and as I said, we have a lovely guest coming in to break down the Super Bowl a little bit early. It's bye week, and we're going right into it. But as we said last week, we could not break these games down alone. We had to bring in a big guest.
A big guest.
He was drafted in 1998 in the 7th round at pick number 199. That's the Tom Brady slot, Dangles, out of San Diego State by the Atlanta Falcons. This 6'7" behemoth proceeded to start all 19 games his rookie season, protecting quarterback Chris Chandler and opening up holes for that dirty bird Jamal Anderson as his Falcons went 14-2 and found themselves in the Super Bowl, which made our guest the youngest player to start in the NFL's final showdown. He went on to play for 13 seasons, making stops in Denver, Jacksonville, Houston, and for Schaefer the Sharp, shitty Detroit Lions.
Hey.
You can find him now broadcasting on Fox Sports 1, but most importantly, he and teammate Chester Pitts were the first team ever to do so poorly on The Amazing Race that they were eliminated at the airport. So please welcome to the show, big number 74, Ephraim Salaam.
Thank you. I was with you all the way up until the last.
I knew you were going to say that.
We had to get a dig in there. Before we start talking about the Super Bowl, my friend, I do have a question for you. You played in those 5 cities, Denver, Jacksonville, Houston, Detroit, and, of course, Atlanta. I want to know, what city had the best post-game meal?
So for post-game meals, like if you're at home, you would just go to whatever restaurant you go to.
Yeah.
So you only really got post-game meals when you're on the road, and that always consisted of pizza or chicken. That's it. That's all you got.
That's all you needed.
I can tell you it probably wasn't in Jacksonville. For my 3 years there, it probably was not. It probably wasn't in Jacksonville.
Oh, no. That was awful. I was contemplating doing something else. Jacksonville and Detroit had me thinking about other things to do with my life.
Oh, no. Well, Ephraim, as Tony said, I am a diehard Detroit Lions fan. I apologize. You had to put up with them for a year.
It was so bad. let's talk about that.
Please.
I got there in 2009. Jim Schwartz had just come over. Mm. You guys had just went 0-16 the year prior.
Yes.
And when I got there, and I had been in the league I'm going to say I was in the league. I had been in the league 11 years, so that was my 12th year.
Yeah.
And when I got there, and those guys, Dominic Raiola and Jeff Backus and all of these guys who had been there their entire career, they never really got to experience what the NFL really is. Mm. And I felt bad for them because it was so depressing. Mm. Like, guys would just come to work and then go home.
Sure.
Go to the games and go home. And so much, the fun part, the most exciting part about the NFL is how you are received in your city and the things you have the opportunity to do. And they didn't have any of that in Detroit.
Mm.
And I felt bad because, look, what's an exciting job if you don't ever get to experience the excitement of it? And the only way you can really experience the excitement is to win at least once. Just one winning season. Just drag yourself into the postseason one time.
Oh, God.
I was in college during that undefeated season, quote-unquote undefeated. And that was a rough one. And I'm sure Dom, you know, Rayola's, you know, I'm sure he's a great guy. But towards the end of his career, we used to say he looked like he was on roller skates at center.
Yeah, he was done. I mean, he gave you all of his good stuff early on. And then after that, what was the point?
Exactly. Yeah.
I know, I like that a lot. Let's talk about your trip, though, to the Super Bowl. You played in Hard Rock Stadium. It was Pro Player Stadium back then. What's the Super Bowl week like in Miami? I mean, it's a great city to be in. I can't imagine what it's like with all the fanfare.
It probably is the best city to have the Super Bowl in my opinion. I've gone to a lot of different Super Bowls as a spectator after that initial run to Miami, and just everything that Miami has to offer in terms of, well, let's start with the obvious, the beach, the atmosphere, the weather, and then the women that go with the beach, the atmosphere, and the weather. And then it's so spread out that you're never really stacked on top of each other unless you're on Ocean Boulevard or Ocean Drive, you know, and that was just mayhem, but good mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of just the festivities and activities that entire week, man, it was unbelievable. Me being a young man fresh out of college, I couldn't even imagine in my wildest dream what that would be. So when I got there, the first thing I did was I rented. Like, I went right from the airport to the hotel, checked in, and I left and went to the exotic rental car place where I had already reserved. And a Hummer, like the ragtop Hummer where you could take the top off. So I reserved a black Hummer for that entire week. And it was like,
that's amazing.
I don't know, man. It like candy and candy and kids, man. It was out of control.
How do you not feel like a badass rolling up and down South Beach in a black Hummer with the top down your first year out of college? Hey, I'm in the Super Bowl. Like, that's exactly what I would have done.
Yeah. Crazy, because my brother was there with me, and then I had two of my college teammates who were also in the pros. Oz Akeem was playing for the Rams, and they went to the Super Bowl the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had Will Blackwell, who was a receiver for the Steelers. So we were all down there, young, money, no responsibilities. And it was unbelievable.
I can imagine those Miami women had no interest in NFL players there for Super Bowl week.
No. They were all looking for CPAs and,
right.
You know.
I can ask about that because it's in Miami. Obviously, you have a lot of young players going to the Super Bowl for the first time with all the sort of nuances that are around them. Are the coaches and the teams a little bit worried that players might get a little bit out of hand? They might not be fully prepped for a practice or something like that? Or is it pretty much you guys are focused on winning the game?
No, you can get carried away now. Like, so you got, as a coach, you really, especially with young players, you really have to rein them in, right? Like, you can't just let them, you know, succumb to their own devices, right?
Yeah.
So we were playing against the Denver Broncos. They had gone the year prior.
Yep.
So they already knew what was going on. And so they didn't even have a curfew. They had a lot of veteran guys on their team.
Mm.
We Atlanta Falcons hadn't even ever come close to the Super Bowl. And the first 3 days, I think we got there on that Monday. So Monday, Tuesday, we didn't have any curfew. And then when we really started the bulk of practice, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we had curfew. Saturday, we had curfew.
Mm.
So we had to be in the hotel room by 10:30.
That had to be
get
tough.
Everything you wanted to get. So the funny part is, I was like, hey, guys, we got whatever we're doing, we got to leave. I got to get back in time for curfew. So they would drop me off at the hotel at about 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I would go in, get some sleep. We're all standing. They had a big suite for me. And when I was getting up to go to practice the next day, they were coming in.
Wow.
That's how aggressive that is. So I was getting up and leaving at like 8:30. They were just arriving back to the hotel.
So Ephraim, you've talked about plenty of off-the-field distractions. I want to take you back, your rookie year. A date, January 17th, 1999. You guys played one of the best NFC Championship games on record. Gary Anderson misses a little chip shot field goal to go up by 10. You guys go down the field, score the game-winning, the game-tying touchdown, force it into overtime, and your boy Mort kicks the game winner to send you to the Super Bowl. What is the hangover like for the locker room, the coaches, the players? After that win, you guys are on such a high. How do you kind of reel back the reins and focus on the task at hand, playing in the Super Bowl?
Well, we didn't. That was the problem.
Got it.
That game was our Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You got to remember, at the time, the Minnesota Vikings with Randall Cunningham and Randy Moss and Chris Carter and, you know, all of these.
Robert Smith.
Robert Smith. And then that defense where they had, you know, John Randall, and they had all, I mean, at the time they had scored more points than any other team in the history of the NFL.
Crazy.
And it was like, you know, Randy Moss, can't guard him. I mean, they're scoring in bunches. And then you had the ragtag group of misfit toy soldiers and the Atlanta Falcons, and nobody gave us a chance to win that game. It was so bad that they were selling Super Bowl packages at the stadium during the game.
We were playing in the game,
and the announcer would come over the loudspeaker and say, hey, you guys come to Concourse F between McDonald's and this for your Super Bowl packages and like the hotels. And like, I was like, while we were playing in the game. They had printed up papers.
You guys were that far in the rearview mirror as far as they were concerned.
They
insane.
Had newspapers printed at the game where fans were holding them saying the Vikings are going to the Super Bowl.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Am I mistaken? Were you guys 14-2?
Yes.
And so, no one gave you a chance. You were 10-point underdogs, I believe. 14-2, and no one gives you a chance. How does that feel as a player?
We loved it.
Yeah,
we loved it because
absolutely.
That was our whole season. That
Amazing.
Was our entire season. You started off, I think we started off 2-1. Then we had a bye.
Ugh.
And we won a couple games, won some games, and then went to the Jets. The Jets beat up on us.
Yeah.
And then from that game, in that locker room, Jamal Anderson went crazy. And we just had a team meeting, and from that moment, we won 11 straight games all the way up to the Super Bowl.
That's unbelievable.
Right? And so the mentality was, we don't care about them.
Yeah.
We just care about us.
Yeah.
So when we got to that game, the turning point in the game, and I don't know if you guys remember this, is they were handling us early in the game.
Yeah.
The first half was coming to an end. I believe they were up. Or 14-3, something like that, and they had the ball with probably like a minute left, and they decided that they were going to try to get more points. Randall Cunningham drops back. Chuck Smith, our all-pro Pro Bowl defensive end, beat Todd Stussy, sack Randall Cunningham, sack fumble. We get the ball, and we score a touchdown going into half. So now it's like 17 or 14-10. When we went in that locker room, we knew we were going to win the game. That was it. We knew for a fact we were going to win that game. It wasn't even any loud noise or rah-rah. We just all knew then when we came out, we were going to win that game.
If only my Packers could have made that play last Sunday against these San Fran 49ers, I might be more cheerful than I am right now. Talking about this game right here, though, you have San Fran, you have Kansas City. I don't really think there's a nobody believes in us factor in these games. Both these guys have been Titans all year long. And do you think, you were talking about how your team sort of wasn't, like, they enjoyed the Miami life, they got ahead of themselves, they weren't prepping the way they should have for the Super Bowl. Do you think San Fran or KC might have that in them? They might get a little bit too loose when they're in Miami, or do you think they're both going to be focused on this?
And no, I think they'll be locked in. Number one, it's the first time in 50 years for Kansas City. So
yeah.
I'm sure it's being resonated through the building that, hey, look, this is it. This could be it for the next 50 years.
Absolutely.
So let's do something about it. And for San Francisco, I mean, they look at their cachet. I mean, they were champions, right? They were the elite class of the NFL for a decade.
Yep.
And so that lineage is still there. That pride is still there. And I think now, even though teams are younger these days, the fact that San Francisco came from nowhere, right? They came from a season where people thought Robert Saleh should have been fired.
Yep.
They knew Kyle Shanahan couldn't go anywhere and Lynch, because they guaranteed their contracts and locked in for 6 years. You can't fire us.
Yeah.
Right.
And for 6 years, let us do our job. And when Jimmy G got hurt last year, it kind of took a lot of that buzz and that feel of the team away from it. But now, tuned in, they've been the most dominant team, in my estimation, in the NFL from the beginning.
Yeah, they really have. They really have.
And how about the Jimmy G injury leads to the number two pick? You get a game changer on the edge like a Nick Bosa, probably the best player on that dominant defense this year as a rookie. I think sometimes NFL, would you agree, sometimes a stroke of luck is necessary to get to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it is. And as fans, we get so caught up in the moment, right? What's happening right now, right? So when you look at what they were doing last year, you were like, oh, my God, it's terrible. You just couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel because you're in the darkness. You're going through it. You're hating it. You hate watching the games because it seems like, you know, no one's playing. But if you watched those games last year, those guys played hard.
They really did.
They lost a bunch of close games, but they always came out and played hard. They lost a lot of those games in the fourth quarter, late in those games, when they just ran out of gas. They just didn't have the talent to take them to the next step of winning those close games. You fast forward a year later, that darkness has paid off because you do get a Bosa.
Yep.
Right? You do get some things and some pieces and free agents, right? You Richard Sherman, you get all of these people to come over, and now they're the cornerstones of your defense. And I mean, this kid, what's his name? The running back.
Mostert. Raheem Mostert.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I'll be having nightmares about him for a while.
Well, and I think it speaks to what you talked about. And they won all those games last year. They were close and won some of those games last year with a third string undrafted quarterback who nobody knew, before his first start. I think maybe you see some of that metal sort of starting to develop there, the winning the games, even with that same thing the Saints sort of did this year. You see what a team is really made of when they're down like that and what they make out of those opportunities.
Yeah, that's the part of the game people don't really talk about because it's not flashy, right? It's not flashy. You can't coach that level of effort. Either it's in your players or not. Look at Miami this year. Miami has one of those teams, right? Like, it was a fire sale for Miami. They got rid of Tunsil. They got rid of, like, they were just handing pieces away.
Yep.
Right? And you watched how hard those guys played, including week 17 and beating the Patriots. That killed the Patriots.
It killed them.
Yes,
that loss eliminated the Patriots from Super Bowl contention.
It really did.
We all know without a first-round bye, they've never won the Super Bowl. They've
all
never made the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So, Miami didn't want to hear that. Miami, the way they played, man, I'm telling you, Fitzmagic, as we like to call him, he came in Obviously, the young quarterback, Josh Rosen, he just couldn't get it done. I feel so bad for that kid.
I do too.
There's no telling what's going to happen to him because you know they're going to replace him next year.
Yep.
But it, just the fight that Miami had, they're going to be one of those teams next year if they get the pieces at quarterback and get another running back and maybe another receiver on the outside. They're going to be the team that sneaks up on people, much like San Francisco did this year.
Absolutely, and they believe in it. They believe in each other. They believe in the coach, and that obviously works a lot more than talent on the field when you actually believe you can do the job you're supposed to do. Now, for this game, for coming up in the Super Bowl, I know we only have you for a little bit, and we can't break down the game like we want to on this podcast, but we have San Fran, the best team in the NFC. We have Kansas City with the defending MVP, Patrick Mahomes, finally healthy again, throwing to a litany of offenses. Do you see that there is a side in this game that has a clear advantage? Do you think it's going to be – I mean, I think it's going to be a very exciting close game, and who do you think is going to come out on top in the end?
I do think it's going to be an exciting close game, but I'll tell you this. If I would give any team an edge, it would be the San Francisco 49ers for this reason. The fact that they can rush and get pressure on the quarterback rush with four defenders is priceless. It is priceless. Remember when the Giants squeaked their way into the playoffs and they went on that run and they won that Super Bowl? It was because Strahan, Justin Tuck, all of OC Umaniere, all of those guys, those four defensive linemen were able to get after the Patriots and Tom Brady without bringing five and six. So now you can rush four, right, and cover with seven. And that in itself, we just watched this past weekend, this Sunday, Tennessee rushed three players. Right? They rushed three players, and they dropped eight. And Patrick Mahomes was back there all day long. Imagine San Francisco rushing four players and being able to get to him, get him off his spot, and you still have those guys in the secondary outnumbering your eligible receivers. That is going to be the difference in this ball game.
It really opens up your playbook defensively when you only have to rush four guys and you can leave the other seven to do whatever the hell you need them to do.
And you have a lockdown corner.
Sherman's going to be an
issue. So think about that. Four defensive linemen, they can get to the quarterback, and you have a lockdown cornerback that takes away a whole side of the field.
It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a juicy one. I cannot wait to see what happens coming up. But before we let you go, every athlete, everyone that comes on this show, we always ask them a hypothetical. You've heard our voices. You've heard us talking. I'm going to give you the hypothetical here. It's a football practice. We're all in pads. We're doing an Oklahoma drill. You got a block. You have Dangles as your running back. He's the smallest of the three of us. You have me and Drew on the other side trying to take Dangles down. A light feather could knock him over. Do we stand a chance at taking Dangles down in an Oklahoma drill against you?
No shot.
That's what I like to hear. I am 5'8", 180 on a good day, so I'm going to need you to block for me.
Your colleague, Ike Taylor.
It's not even close.
We love the reactions. Your colleague, Ike Taylor, his quote was, "Not a chance in hell." And I love the no shot, so we're going to add that to our quote, Mount Rushmore, my friend. Thank you for that.
You can add some more people. You can get the cousins or whoever else
cousins.
You want.
I'll block them all.
Because, look, if he stays behind me, you'll never get to him. You'll never get to him.
Listen, I got a hell of a rip move. I don't know.
I mean, Tony, you can't teach 6'7".
What you can do is you can rip yourself out of the play.
That's right.
Right? So you can go on rip. You can take you and your rip move and rip the hell on.
Rip the hell on? Go ahead.
One of you guys is going to get hurt. So whichever one you guys are willing to sacrifice, then go right ahead.
Whoever has the best insurance, then we'll pick that one.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Ephraim Salam on Twitter. He's at Ephraim Salam. On Instagram, he's at eSalam74, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy making your pizza.
Hey, we appreciate it, man. Left
Coasters. All right, folks, thank you for listening to the Left Coast Gamblers. Again, Tony Cavallo, Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crooks, and Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio. That was a hell of an interview with big Mr. Ephraim
Salam. He was great, man.
He's awesome.
He was great.
He's awesome. I was so happy to have that. Dangles, you got anything to say before we end up in Super Bowl week?
It's going to be weird not seeing my Patriots in it for the first time in a few years.
First time in the history of this podcast.
First time in the history of this podcast, but I'm excited for what's going to be a barn burner of a football game.
Yeah.
First time we won't be seeing C.J. Anderson Jefferson or LeGarrette Blunt in 7 years in a Super Bowl.
Also
read that
correct.
Today. That was interesting. But hey, I'm stoked. I'm pumped for our show next week.
Cannot wait.
Super Bowl preview show is going to be huge. We've got some really cool guests lined up for the show.
Let's just put a little cliffhanger out there. We have a guest that will be attending the Super Bowl. And he
not
will
as a
be
fan.
On the sidelines working.
Ooh.
Who could it be? You'll have to tune in next week
and
to find
And just for
out.
You perverts, it's not Aaron Andrews, sorry.
21 questions starts now. And that's it for the Left Coast Gamblers Championship Recap Show. Thank you so much for listening. I'm excited for next week. And as always,
Tony, I'm sorry. I'm not going to let you get away with it. I thought you were going to rehash our fantasy pool, bud.
You know, I was doing the numbers. I was doing all the math and putting it all together, and then I lit the whole thing on fire.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports-related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.